Blog Talk Radio.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Deport from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Hello, and welcome to Provocative Thought, intimately known as PT, striving to awaken those who are asleep, stimulate those who are awakened, feed those who are starving, and nurture those who seek to know. I am your host, Carlton Steed, a self-proclaimed student in the search, discovery, and revelation of life on life's terms. First, I'd like to thank We Talk Productions for allowing me to host this show. I'd also like to thank the creator for allowing me to be. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Please press the number one to speak. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Please press the number one to speak. You can reach us on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to search, type in We Talk Productions, and listen to the show live. You can also contact us on Facebook at Provocative Thought PT Community Organization. Tonight's topic, New Year's. What is the origin of the New Year celebration. Well, here we are at the end and beginning of a new year. What are the origins of the New Year's celebrations? And why do we do some of the things we do on the New Year? The easy answer is we have been indoctrinated, taught to observe the New Year's celebrations. And some of us have questions, have not questioned the origins and traditions that we observe, right? Well, some of us observe, anyway. Let's have a look at it from history.com. Excuse me. They say the earliest recorded festivities in honor of a New Year's arrival date back some 4,000 years to ancient Babylon. The Babylonians, the first new moon following the vernal equinox, the day in late March with an equal amount of sunlight and darkness, was the start of the new year. So here we have the new year starting in March. That's very important to the Babylonians. It marked the occasion with massive religious festival called Akitu, derived from the Sumerian word for barley, which was cut in the spring. Right? Involved a different ritual on each of its 11 days. So, according to this thing here, they had 11 days that they had different rituals on. That may sound familiar to you guys, maybe, to the Christmas thing, right? 12-day of Christmas, every day you did something, have something. I think Kwanzaa have something like that also. Anyway, in addition to the New Year, Atiku celebrated the mystical victory of the Babylonian sky god Marduk over the evil sea goddess Tiamat, and served an important political purpose, right? During this time that a new king was crowned, or that the current ruler's divine mandate was symbolically renewed. That sounds like presidency every year. In Babylon. Did you know, in order to realign the Roman calendar with the sun, Julius Caesar had to add 90 extra days to the year 46 BC when he introduced his new Julian calendar. So I thought that was interesting. So if he added 90 extra days, where did we get the year from before that? Anyway, because that kind of says that the year is 10 months, right? It's about 60 days, no, about 9 months a year. Anyway, throughout antiquity, civilizations around the world developed increasingly sophisticated calendars, typically pinning the first day of the year as an agricultural or astronomical event, right? In Egypt, the new year began with an annual flooding of the Nile, right, which coincided with the rising of the star Sirius, the first day of the lunar new year. Meanwhile, occurred with the second new moon after the winter solstice, right? January 1st becomes the New Year's Day, right? The early Roman calendar consisted of 10 months and 304 days. with each new year beginning at the vernal equinox. According to the tradition, it was created by Romulus, the founder of Rome. In the 8th century BC, after a later king, Numa Pompilius, is credited with adding the months of Januarius and Februarius, right? January and February, right? Over the centuries, the calendar fell sync with the sun, and in 46 BC, the Emperor Julius Caesar decided to solve the problem by consulting with prominent astronomers, mathematicians, and they came up with the Julian calendar, which closely resembles the more modern Gregorian calendar, right? That most countries around the world use today, right? As you can see, this has a lot to do with times and new numbers and things like that, right? As a part of reform, Caesar instituted January 1st as the first day of the year, partly to honor the month's namesake, Janus, the Roman god of beginnings. Guess we could do a show on just the 12 months of the year, where they came from, but we're not tonight. Whose two phases allow him to look back into the past and forward into the future. They celebrated this by offering sacrifices to Janus, exchanging gifts with one another, decorating their homes with branches, laurel branches, and attending, I guess they had wild parties. In medieval Europe, Christian leaders temporarily replaced January 1st as the first of the year with days carrying more religious sacrifice, such as December 25th, the anniversary of Jesus' birth, and March 25th, the Feast of the Annunciation, right? Pope Gregory the looks like the 13th reestablished January 1st as the new year in 1582. New Year's traditions and celebrations around the world, right? Many countries' New Year's celebrations begin on the evening of December 31st, New Year's Eve, and continue into the early hours of January 1st. Revelers often enjoy meals, snacks, thought to bestow good luck for the coming year. In Spain, several other Spanish-speaking countries, people broke down a dozen grapes, symbolizing their hopes for the month ahead right before midnight. 12 grapes, y'all got 12 grapes, y'all can do what they do in Spain. I'm not suggesting you do it, I'm just saying. Parts of the world, traditional New Year's dishes feature legumes, which are thought to be reasonable coins and herald future financial success. Examples include lentils in Italy and black-eyed peas in the southern United States. That sounds familiar to me. That's the black-eyed pea part, not the lentils. Because pigs represent progress and prosperity in some cultures, right? Pork appears on a New Year's Eve table in Cuba, Australia, Hungary, Portugal, and other countries. We're not going to argue without thinking about the pig. Ring-shaped cakes and pastries, a sign of the year has come full circle around. Round out the feast in the Netherlands, Mexico, Greece, and elsewhere, right? So they have these ring-shaped circle, means full circle, so it's full, so it's not broken, so. Okay. Sweden and Norway, they have rice pudding with a almond hidden inside, served on New Year's Eve. Whoever finds the nut can expect 12 months of good fortune. That's the easy one. Just bake the cake, bake this, make this pudding, and just make one, and just one person be there. You be the one finding the nuts, so you get 12 months of good fortune. And say you couldn't cheat, right? Anyway, other customs include watching fireworks and singing songs to welcome the new year, including the ever popular Auld Lang Syne in many English-speaking countries, right? I don't even know that. I've never heard of that, but a lot of stuff I never heard of. Don't be surprised at that. So, in the United States, the most iconic New Year's tradition is the dropping of the Great Ball in New York on Times Square, right? So they said millions of people around the world watch the event. It's taking place almost every year since 1907. So that's a serious event right there. And the ball has changed. You know, they talk about went from 700-pound iron wood ball to 12,000 pounds of whatever it's made out of now. Right, that little bright, globey thing they're doing. Anyway. From history.com, following the first new moon after the vernal equinox in late March, the Babylonians of ancient Mesopotamia would honor the rebirth of the natural world with a multi-day festival called Akitu, right? We talked about that, right? Dates back to 2000 BC. These rituals, they believe, were symbolically cleansed and recreated by the gods in preparation for the new year and the return of spring. Through these rituals, Babylonians believed the world was symbolically cleansed and recreate it. That's interesting because, as you know, Yom Kippur means cleansing. And so these things, even though these may be considered as pagan rituals, depending on what religion you practice, faith or faith, I really wouldn't call it, they have some semblance to Yom Kippur, which we'll get to. This part right here is the rituals that Babylonians believe the world was symbolically cleansed. That's interesting. One fascinating aspect of Akitu is involved a kind of ritual humiliation endured by a Babylonian king. This particular tradition saw the king brought before a statue of the god Marduk, right? Stripped of his royal stuff, you know, forced to swear that he had led the city with honor. The high priest would then slap the monarch and drag him by his ears in hope of making him cry. If royal tears were shed, it was seen as a sign that Marduk was satisfied and had symbolically extended the king's rule. Well, you drag somebody by the ears, I'm going to go with that's going to hurt, depending on what kind of king you had, whether he's not going to cry or not. But I think pulling somebody, dragging them by the ears, well, that's a man. That's at least 150 pounds being drugged. They're just going to put some onions up in front of his face and, you know, do the easy way. But anyway, at the sign, if he cried, Marduk was satisfied, had symbolically extended the king's rule. Some historians have since argued that these political elements suggest that Akitu was used by the monarchy as a tool for reaffirming the king's divine power over his people. I'm going to say that's a little weird to me. Dragging somebody by the ears. Okay, and what happened to using your words and communicating and things like that? Oof. Anyway, ancient Roman celebration of Janus, right? Just talked about that. The Roman New Year also originally corresponded with the vernal equinox, right? But years of tampering with the solar calendar eventually saw the holiday established on its more familiar date of January 1st. So it moved from around March to, I guess, adding all these days and stuff like that, right? January 1st, right? This name was derived from the two-faced deity, as we talked about, Janus, who, the god of change and beginnings, right, was seen as symbolically looking back at the old and ahead at the new. Well, it's the same. You don't know where you've been. You can't know where you're going at. So you have it going on in ancient Rome. Anyway, Romans would celebrate January 1st by giving offerings to Janus in hopes of gaining good fortune for the new year. They were seen as a setting the stage for the next 12 months. And it was common for friends and neighbors to make a positive start to the year by exchanging well wishes, gifts of figs, honey with one another. According to the poet Ovid, most Romans also chose to work for at least part of New Year's Day. Hey, did y'all hear that? We always look forward to not working on New Year's Day, right? Anyway, as idleness, right, was seen as a bad omen for the rest of the year. Okay, that has not been incorporated in Western society at all. But they're looking for a day off, New Year's Day, and the day after, because, well, you know why. Ancient Egyptian, with Pet, Ren Pet, R-W-E-P-E-T-R-E-N-P-E-T. Some ancient stuff right here. Ancient Egyptians, right? They said culture was closely tied to the Nile River, as everybody knows. And it appears that the new year corresponded with the annual flood. According to the Roman writer, Censorinus. Excuse me. Censorinus, right? The Egyptian New Year was predicted when Cyrus, the brightest star in the sky, first became visible after a 70-day absence, better known as the heliacal rising. The heliacal rising. This phenomenon typically occurred during the mid-July, just before the annual inundation of the Nile River, which helped ensure the farmlands remain fertile for the coming year. If that doesn't happen, you'll lose crops, you don't have enough crops, you can't feed people starve, you don't have right nutrition, you know, get sick, commerce affects the whole society, right? So Nile River is very, very important, right? Help with the cultivation of the land. I mean, now we got sprinklers to do that, right? Egyptians celebrated this new beginning with a festival known as Wepet Renpet, which means opening of the year. The new year was seen as a time of rebirth and rejuvenation. It was honored with feasts and religious rites. Okay, it's funny because it's a lot of eating. People like to eat when they have a, it's your birthday, let's eat. Graduate, let's eat. You got married, let's eat. Had a baby, let's eat. Just met you, let's go out and eat. We got a lot of like traditions that involve eating. Just do I say that. Recommended for you. Not unlike many people today, Egyptians may also use this as an excuse for getting a little bit tipsy. So I guess it is dips, you should toss it up a little bit. So they say recent discoveries at the Temple of Mut show that during the reign of Hatshepsut, the first month of the year played host to a festival of, believe it or not, drunkenness. A festival of drunkenness. Can you imagine that? What's wrong with these Egyptians? Anyway, this massive party was tied to the myth of Sakhmet, a war goddess who had planned to kill all humanity until the sun god Ra tricked her into drinking herself unconscious. I was just going to say something like that, because when you're drunk, you're vulnerable. But anyway, in honor of mankind's salvation, the Egyptians would celebrate with music, sex, revelry, and perhaps most important of all, copious amounts of beer. Lots of beer. Anyway, so you got to drink a lot of beer to get. But then again, I don't know what Egyptian beer was like. But anyway, they got drunk. And it was okay. The whole city drunk. Somebody just coming in with all the gold. And their queen. Anyway, that sounds like the New Year's celebration I had coming up. All that celebrating, eating, drinking. I imagine people having sex on New Year's, right? Got the New Year's kiss. That's a prelude to sex. And who knows what happens after that, right? So it sounds like New Year's sounds like a conglomerate so far of so-called pagan observances. And we're going to go on to the Lunar New Year, right? Lunar means moon, right? It's one of the oldest traditions still celebrated today. Lunar New Year, also called Chinese New Year, which is believed to have originated over 3,000 years ago during the Shang Dynasty. It began as a way of celebrating the new beginnings, right? So if people are thankful for making it for the 9 or 12 months, I don't know which it was. 3,000 years ago, but they were the holiday began the way of celebrating the new beginnings of the spring planting season. It later became entangled with the myth and legend, right? So you see the connection with life, things that support life, and religious or spiritual or practices and things like that, right? In different cultures. According to the popular tale, there was once a bloodthirsty creature called Nia, now the Chinese word for year. Nia means year in Chinese, right? So I hope I said that right. He played on the villagers every new year. In order to frighten the hungry beasts, the villagers took to decorating their homes with red trimmings, burning bamboo, and making loud noises. Sound familiar to anybody? If you get a lot of loud noises for New Year's, I don't know what those things are called, but it's a lot of stuff they make a noise with. They blow the thing out, horns, things you shake around, and of course the loud mouth folks out there, right? So a lot of loud noises, right? The rules work, and the bright colors and lights associated with scaring off with associated with scaring off neon eventually became integrated into the celebration. So here you see that we see that over here, right? Well, of course, I mean, in Rome they had parties, some quiet parties. Festivity traditionally lasted 15 days and tend to center on the home of the family. I wonder if most people stay home during New Year's or do they travel. I'm going to say they stay home. I'm going to go out on limits and think. I'm going to think that most people are home. People clean their homes to rid them of bad luck, and some repay old debts as a way of settling the previous year's affairs, right? Some people like to do stuff like that, but not right now. You got to say before New Year come, you want to contact somebody and see them a long time, you know, or make up with somebody, or make sure you don't want to go to the next New Year like that, you know. Some people do set those type of goals, objectives for the New Year, right? So in order to encourage an auspicious start to the New Year, they also decorate doors with paper scrolls and gather with relatives for a feast. I think everybody, a lot of folks, I can't say everybody, a lot of folks probably having that New Year's feast, right? Following the invention of gunpowder in the 10th century, the Chinese were the first to ring in the new year, I guess you know what it's doing at, right? With the fireworks, right? So they were the first that had the fireworks, so they were the first to use it for the new year. Makes sense. And so that whole tradition appears to come from the Chinese, the firework thing. Anyway, New Year is still based on a lunar calendar that dates back to the second millennium BC. The holiday typically falls in the late January or early February or the second new moon after the winter solstice. Each year is associated with one of the 12 zodiac animals, right? The rat, ox, tiger, rabbit, dragon, snake, horse, goat, monkey, rooster, dog, and the pig. All right, so we see a couple of things from the Chinese. The gunpowder, cleaning the houses, pay old debts and things like that. You probably got a couple of things from the Chinese celebration. I'm sure we just didn't get exploding things from that. Anyway, noun with roots. No, I don't even know how to say this word. N-O-W-R-U-C. This was celebrated in the Middle East and Asia. The roots of No Roots or New Day, which reached back into antiquity, often called the Persian New Year. This 13th spring festival falls around the vernal equinox, again, in March. See, we got a lot of things that center around agriculture because people were agriculturally dependent, as we are now. But we got some other stuff that we do, like I've never planted a field of nothing. I go to the supermarket, right? That kind of thing, right? Anyway, these people are heavily dependent on agriculture. They eat from the ground, literally, not from the ground to some place, to another place, to another place. Then you go get it. They're not doing it. They eat it directly from the ground. All right? And that means something. But I'm going to keep going because that's another show, even if I wanted to do it, to even talk about that. So the 13-day festival falls around the vernal equinox of March and is believed to have originated in modern-day Iran as part of the Zoroastrian religion, right? Official workers of Nowruz did not appear until the second century. Most historians believe the celebration dates back at least as far as the 6th century BC, and the rule of the Achaemenid Empire. I've never heard of that empire. Anyway, like I said, there's a lot of things I've never heard of, right? Unlike many other ancient Persian festivals, Nowruz was persisted as an important holiday even after Iran's conquest by Alexander the Great in 333 BC. And the rise of Islamic rule in the 7th century AD. Right? So they must have really liked that because they kept it. But a lot of this stuff, I'm going to say, go out on a limb and say, it's fun stuff. I'm not going to try to make a judgment if it's right or wrong. I'm just saying it seems like fun stuff. Right? And it seems like they're pretty thankful for nature. You know what I mean? They love nature and they appreciate it. And I'm assuming these people here would probably never pollute, you know, the Nile River and you know, defile the land and for profit. I'm going to keep going. That was a little message right there. Anyway, it focused on the rebirth that accompanies the return of spring, right? Because what happens in spring? Spring is symbolic with life, right? More life than we live at. You live up in the northeast part of the United States, you see life. Things come actually back to life, right? Trees could grow leaves or fields, start to produce whatever it is they produce, and things like that, right? So monarchs would use the holiday to host banquets, give out gifts, and hold audiences with their subjects. Other traditions are feasts, right? Exchanging presents with family members and neighbors, lighting bonfires, dyeing eggs, are sprinkling water to symbolize creation. See, these people are very, very connected with life and the sources of life and the things that perpetuate life. So, I mean, you can call them what you want, you know, pagan or whatever, but they all deal with life, right? So, anyway, they come up one ritual they had in the 10th century involved electing a new ruler, a commoner who would pretend to be king for 7 days before being dethroned. Now, I don't think we're going to do nothing like that. We have enough problem with people saying the elections was phony elections and, you know, fixed. And I'm not saying elections aren't fixed or phony, but I'm just saying we got enough problems with elections and to have this kind of a thing going on over here, right? Anyway, I just thought I'd throw that in there. It seemed like these guys are just having fun with it to me, right? They use bonfires and colored eggs. Remain a part of the modern holiday, which is observed by the estimated 3 million people each year. So today these people just having fun, basically showing their appreciation for nature. From the Reader's Digest, why do people kiss on New Year's Day? Right? So the New Year's thing called a New Year's kiss, right? I guess so, right? All right, so, and this, I don't even know why this is going to, this person is Christina Fitzgerald, PhD professor of English literature at the University of Toledo. The earliest mention of a New Year's kiss. That's how deep they go on with the New Year's kiss. It seems like it's a one-sentence answer. But again, they, you know, you never know. Middle Ages specifically, sir, Gawain and the Green Knight. One takes place on New Year's Day and refers to a holiday game in which the ladies who lose must give something to the men. It says suggest that they did so happily, right? So it's a game. So and they willfully played it. They're not being forced, they're saying. I guess that's what they're saying. Meanwhile, the male winners are not angry about the rule. And ironic understatement, Fitzgerald tells Reader's Digest, every glossed edition and commentary she's seen on the issue assumes that something is a kiss. So she's, whatever game they play, it's like spin the bottle. So yeah, they're going to be pretty happy about that, spinning the bottle, right? So I guess that must be the first spin the bottle game, except that they didn't have bottles, so I guess they did like this. Anyway. Apart from following customs of murky origins, what's the reason behind giving someone a New Year's kiss? The kiss is both the kiss is part of both English and German folklore, which indicate that whoever a person is with at midnight portends what type of luck, right, they will have for the rest of their life. So if you're with somebody who's bad luck, that's kind of luck, you know, you're going to have, they say, for the rest of the year. So I guess that helps you, people with their selection. You know what I'm saying? So if you're with somebody doesn't mean you well, that kind of makes sense, though, that's in a way. It seemed like superstition, but really, if you actually with that person, trying to be with them, that might be the kind of luck you're going to have for the rest of the year if you're going to hang in there a whole year, even if you make it through it. If you make it through a whole year, if y'all having a bad time at that point, I don't even see why you would be with that person in New Year's. But I get what they're saying, and it sounds like a superstition to me, because a lot of times we think we found gold, and what we have is costume jewelry. You know what I'm saying? So, but I'm going to go ahead on to this article here. A kiss should last for as long as or short as it is enjoyable for both parties and appropriate for both the relationship and the setting, right? So they're saying, look, be mindful of where you are. You know, if you need a bedroom, be somewhere where, in a bedroom setting for that New Year's kiss. If you're out in public with 200, 400 other people, be mindful that that's where you are. You shouldn't be grabbing all over nobody, doing tongue all down somebody's lungs and stuff like that. You know, be mindful. Then, you know, you might not know that girl that well. So you don't want to, you know, swap spit with her and tongue and, you know, get your teeth licked, tonsils, you know, whatever it is you do when you do the kissing and stuff like that. Anyway, so, right, that makes sense. That's just basic courtesy and knowing who you're with kind of thing. So you think about it, some of this stuff, whether it's pagan or whatever you call it, not as far-fetched as I thought it would be, you know. Not like, oh, bizarre. That's bizarre, like, kind of thing. You know, I get it. It doesn't matter if it's real, true, or not, anything like that. It's just a fun thing they're doing, like they do Christmas. There's no Santa Claus and reindeers don't fly. No chimneys for this fat white dude to fall down with. You know, chimney is very small. You know, a person can't get down a chimney. Not the kind of chimneys we have, if you have a chimney. A lot of people don't even have a chimney. So, anyway, I guess it's a little game you're playing, you know. I'm generally going to play these little games with stuff that's not real once I find out what they are. And I don't want to play it, you know. So I like keeping it real myself. But these folks seem to be having a nice little time here, right? The point of the kiss is about making connections. I should hope so if you're putting your lips on somebody. Anywhere, both physical and emotional connection. I would hope that you are already connected before you even kiss that person. You know, sometimes you kiss a stranger. That doesn't mean you're not connected with that person, because sometimes you feel connected to people. I heard Suzanne Summers. She had sex with her husband the first time she saw him, and they were married for a long time. I don't know if they remained married or not, but they remained married together from that point on. So that may be unusual. I'm not suggesting anybody do that, but I'm just using that as an example. Sometimes people are connected when you think that they're not. Right? So, anyway. A kiss at midnight is said to strengthen the bond, right? Which is where the superstition comes in, right? If a couple doesn't kiss at midnight, people believe that their bond is not as strong and could fail in the year to come. And the only thing I have to say about that is good luck with that. Man, because relationships are hard. Like most of this is from Business Insider. It's meaningless. It's not a sign. You'll spend your whole year miserable and alone if you don't find someone who wants to kiss you. Yes, because suppose you're in prison. You know what I'm saying? Not a good look. New Year's, right? So, but also, like other traditions, it does date back a long time. It's talking about some historians trace it back to ancient Rome, right? The Romans knew how to party and would throw a big celebration every year called the Festival of Saturnalia. It's also a part of Saturnalia. It's also part of why we kiss under the mistletoe. I didn't know that. I thought that was a Christmas thing. Seemed like it come from the New Year's celebration, right? In ancient Greece, to celebrate the festival, people would kiss underneath the plant because it was associated with fertility. So that I knew. Okay. Romans would reconcile differences with enemies under mistletoe, and it represented peace. There ain't nothing wrong with peace, man. I like that. I like being at peace, not at war with people. So during the Renaissance, masquerade balls were popular across Europe. At midnight, people would remove their masks and kiss were a way of purifying each other from evil. Woo! Now I hear people say some of that kissing stuff is evil. Some they say they use the kiss to purify from evil. Some people say the kiss is used for evil, right? If you got that last kiss with Jesus, right, with Judas. We got that kiss of the mafia thing, you know. And you get that kiss from that betrayal, that unloyal paramour, wife, girlfriend, boyfriend, husband, you know, that kind of thing, right? I'm not trying to throw a wrench in, but I'm just trying to hit, you know, as many things as I can before I, you know, go off the air. Anyway, English-German folklore built this idea around the spirit of superstition that midnight kiss strengthens a budding romance, and a avoiding it means a loveless year ahead. Well, you know, I kind of could see that, because if you with somebody at midnight, you are about to get into something other more than a kiss. You kissing it around midnight, I would say that would strengthen a romance, or whatever you want to call it. Or else, what are you doing there at 12 o'clock? It is a fun tradition, though. It is always nice to have someone around to bring the new year in with. That's right. If you got a willing partner, it's always nice to have somebody that's on the same page as you. The Scottish celebration is called Hogmanay. It is a tradition to give a kiss to everyone in the room. Woo! That's a little much for me. I won't go to Scotland around the New Year's. And the idea is to connect friends and strangers, and it also makes the single people feel a bit better. Okay. All right, this guy's pretty friendly. So, when is the biblical New Year? I'm not going to stay too long on this year. But it's saying the Bible says to him, Exodus 12 says the first day of the New Year is in the spring, in the month Passover celebrated. Exodus 23 indicates that the end of the year is in the fall, and with the harvest festival and the blowing of trumpets. It's the biblical new year in the spring or the fall. Exodus 12 does not speak of the Passover celebration, and 12:2 reads, This month shall mark for you the beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year for you. Exodus 23 clearly states that the end of the year is in the fall after the harvest. You shall observe the festival of ingathering at the end of the year when you gather in from the field the fruit of your labor. Exodus 23:16. So you can go to scriptural land. It's not a Bible class tonight. I'm just hitting on some of origins of some of the practices in, of New Year. So I'm no religious scholar, but you can't have two New Year's celebrations within the same year if it is representative of the calendar New Year, which is of time based on 12 months. Maybe the biblical year was shorter, and they had two, or like they said, they talk about two different parts of the year, so they count from two different points. And that way, you can have two different New Years. If I count from February to January instead of January to December, you know, if I'm counting from different points in the calendar, I could. I'm still going to have 12 months. It's just I'm counting from different points. I don't know. I'm just trying to make it see how it works. And that's one way it could work. Anyway. They go into this thing about the first five books, not, you know, I'm not getting to that, because that's kind of biblical stuff that people that really treads on people's faith. Anyway, they talk about the redactors or the rewriters of the stories, and the stories being handed down verbally for a long time. And Kingdom, Southern Kingdom had two different stories. That's how they come up with these two different versions of the New Year, which is okay. They had two different versions of the New Year celebration. As for the people who really have a problem with that, to figure it out, right? I stumbled on it tonight or today on today's show, and I'm not going to try to figure it out. That's above my pay grade, and that's a lot of work. There's only one thing certain. There are two celebrations referred to as the New Year's celebration in the Bible, or are there simply two separate times the Israelites celebrated a spring festival and a fall festival during the year, like I said, right? Maybe the redactors made an error. Maybe the storytellers made an error. Maybe this man's interpretation is incorrect. One thing for sure is that they did observe something during what is perceived to be the beginning of the month, right? So, here's the bad news. I'm going to go through this as quick as I can. The restored Church of God said God hates all pagan customs and traditions, including New Year's. I'm not trying to drop the axe on anybody's New Year's celebration, but they said notice what God thinks of New Year's and any holiday that has its roots in pagan practices, customs, traditions. You will be shocked. We started with Jeremiah 10:2-3. Learn not the way of the heathen, for the customs of the people are vain. Then it goes to throughout his word, God describes the heathen as those who worship nature, the sun, moon, stars, trees, and man-made idols, which is kind of like what people are thankful for the summer, the spring, and things like that, right? Nature, right? Those people, I don't know if that's worshiping it, but they're showing appreciation for it. And said, guys, don't like people who worship those things, right? So you got to read your own Bible and read about these different religions and stuff like that to say, you know, the Babylonians were considered as pagans, right? So how serious God about paganism? He rescued 12 tribes of Israel from Egypt, and he said to them, where I bring you, shall you not do, neither shall you walk in men's ordinances, right? Oh, I think I missed that. After the doings of the land of Egypt, where in you dwelt, you shall not do, and after the doings in the land of Canaan, where I bring you, shall you not do, neither you walk in men's ordinances, Leviticus 18:3. God told the Israelites not to defile themselves with the practices and customs of the surrounding nations. That's 24:29, right? Therefore, you shall keep my ordinances, that you commit not any of these abominable customs which are committed before you, and that you defile not yourself therein. I am the Lord thy God, right? That's verse 30. God has his own calendar with his own new year, he said. When God instituted the Passover to Israel, he also revealed to them his sacred calendar. This month shall be unto you the beginning of month. It shall be the first month of the year to you, Exodus 12:2. God's calendar began with the spring between March and April of the world's calendar system. Leviticus 23 reveals all the special holy days, Sabbaths that they say Christians are to observe, right? God does not command or suggest or even allow his followers even ever to throw aside self-control for a night of partying, right? Well, I'm running out of time. Actually, Leviticus 23 reveals all the special holy days that Hebrew Israelites are to observe. Christianity wasn't around in those days and didn't show up until after the death of Yeshua or Jesus. Christianity is a religion based on the life, death, and teaching of Yeshua ben Yosef. He is an Israelite. Just thought I'd throw that in there because he put the word Christian in there. And really, it was the Israelites and Christians are following people who consider themselves as Christians are following, if they're following this, are following the ordinances that were given to the Israelites, right? Anyway, from Britannica, Christianity is a religion stemming from the life teachings and death of Jesus of Nazareth, the Christ, and the anointed one of God in the first century common era, right? So, Leviticus 23 27, the 10th day of the 7th month is the Day of Atonement. Hold a sacred assembly and deny thyself and present a food offering to the Lord, right? So they say that, right? So I think they call that Yom Kippur, right? It's not in the Bible, Yom Kippur, but somewhere it got translated to Yom Kippur, which means atonement, right? So I'm not going to get into that. So anyway, these authors say, and back it up with scripture, right, about when the New Year's is, right? So, but even with this one, it's the spring, the day that things spring up out of the earth, right? Things grow up out of the earth, right? So you'll need to do your own research if you go any further with the investigation, because this, we could go into a whole lot of things about what is what. We're not going to do that, right? Whatever, however, whenever the new year is, it's here again for those who wish to partake in it, right? And I'm not encouraging nobody to celebrate or not to celebrate it. I don't celebrate New Year's, right? Because every day is important to me. Only the day that you breathe is important. The rest of them come and gone, and the future hasn't come yet. So anyway, all I want to say is to everybody, you know, have a safe New Year. Have a safe and prosperous rest of your life. You know, so whether you think it's the New Year or not, have a safe and prosperous rest of your life from this day on. Each one reach one, each one teach one. Till next week, y'all. Peace out.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials, because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from the Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the shape of a war theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner, because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run, or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Report from 29 District. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.